Good afternoon, brethren in Bendigo. Seek peace. How do we seek peace? There are many ways. Today I'm going to cover three steps and three suggestions that may help. Number one, we need to realize that offenses do come. So don't be surprised. Expect them. Offenses will come. Second, you got to get upset. You're kidding yourself if someone really hurts you, says something that is hurtful and offensive. I mean, you're dreaming if you think that's not going to hurt. But you've got to blow off steam. You must get it out of your system. And my next point will be a little bit of here and there. I term it here and there advice from God's Word. Now, if we go to Luke 17, verse 1 to start off. Luke 17, verse 1. Offenses are going to come. We're told that offenses will come. Let's not be surprised. Luke 17 and verse 1. Then he said to the disciples, "It is impossible that no offenses will come." So it's impossible for no offenses to be there. They're going to come. But woe to the one by whom they come. And if we go to Matthew 16, it is interesting that amongst our presence, amongst those that serve God, that are called by God, there is another presence there. Matthew 16, verse 21. Now, the situation is that Christ has got his face going towards Jerusalem. And it reads, 16:21, Matthew, "From that time Jesus began to explain to his disciples that it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem and to suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and to be killed." They're going to kill me, he said. "And to be raised the third day." Look at what the natural thing for us to do. We want a good ending. We want good news. So in verse 22, "But after taking him aside," now here's Peter, the natural leader, the tough, big-chested fisherman, right? I don't know whether he had a big chest, but he sure did have power of leadership, which is why he was chosen. And for his character, after taking him aside, can you imagine? He took Christ aside, probably had his arm around him. Peter began to say, "God will be favorable to you, Lord. In no way shall this happen to you." Come to your senses. It ain't going to happen. Come on. Cheer up. What was the answer? And then he, Christ, turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me." You are an offense to me. So it means that Satan suddenly had taken Peter by surprise, used those proclivities and abilities and talents of leadership, natural talents that Peter had, and he used them against Christ. And Christ said, "You are an offense." He pointed the finger at the cause of the offense, the presence of Satan deceiving Peter. "You are an offense to me because your thoughts are not in accord with the things of God, but the things of men." You see, the things of God are pretty tough sometimes. God's will is, God is not just a nicey, nicey, goody, goody. And the way to salvation, right, is difficult. We can't be like Cain. Cain had his way of saying, "What's right, what's wrong, God, you got to accept it." And if we go to Luke 9 now, here's another example in Luke 9. And it comes from James and John, where they called the sons of thunder for no reason. In Luke 9, let's look at what happened here. Luke 9 and verse 53. Now, Christ was rejected here. He doesn't receive, get lost, get out of here. We don't want to see you. He was flatly rejected and it caused an offense. Luke 9 verse 53. But they did not receive him because his face was as if he were going to Jerusalem. Verse 54. And seeing this, okay, it had an effect on the sons of thunder, James and John, said, Lord, will you have us call fire, come down from heaven and consume them, just like Elijah did. Hey, scriptural. Verse 55, but he turned and rebuked them and said, you do not understand of what spirit you are. So that they were not of God's spirit, what spirit was motivating them to make that judgment and interpret and understand scripture thinking they were just right? You don't understand. And about that spirit, let's go to 1 John and chapter 4. 1 John 4. He turned and rebuked and said to them, you don't understand of what spirit you are. So what happens? What spirits are there? Here's a comment. 1 John 4, 1. Observation from the Apostle John and inspired as scripture. 1 John 4 verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. And so we have a variety of spirits that are not God's spirit, God's inspiration, God's way. God's way is not man's way. And so these are the things that are the forces that at work within the fellowship of God's people. And here, I just recall a time many years back, the minister had decided that we would have a camp out in the bush, right, in the Australian bush, and there was nothing there. And they were just going to cook some sausages on a barbecue and have tents, and that's sort of it. And I could just see that no one was going to go. I mean, who would want to go? And there were some people that were adamant, yeah, the barbecues, you know, out in the sticks is sausages and a bit of stale bread, and that's it, you rough it. And I thought, well, I thought different. I went, you're not going to get a good turnout. Well, I spoke about it with Manola and we decided, yeah, all right, well, we'll give it a go. And we offered to cater. And we set up, it worked, and we had a bumper crowd come in. We charged $20 for dinner Friday, breakfast on the Sabbath, lunch on the Sabbath, dinner on the Sabbath, and breakfast on the Sunday. And I think it included lunch on the Sunday as well. And then we could leave. And they had activities. We had sermons and so on for the weekend. It was a great weekend together. And it was successful. Now, we did that so that everyone could come together. And we set up a kitchen in the wilderness, the whole bit. And we put everything on the back of a trailer, the back of our four-wheel drive then. It was a bit of work to tie it all up and pack and food. It was a bit of work. And we did it. And it really worked well. It brought everyone together and we had people volunteer, do things. Great. Then we did it year by year. And about the third or fourth year, we were called into the back. The minister wanted to talk to us. And there was an elder there. Who, now I don't speak ill of him, but the elder and the deacon were there, and I had put the price up to $35. I'll tell you, I thought, well, I'll rough it one time, two times, but it's easier if I've got a van, if they take just a little bit more, and I don't have to tie everything up carefully. I have a van, I just throw all the food in there and drive it there, and then I've got a storeroom as well. Well, there was a lot of indignant comments. Like, do you have to have pavlova at a camp out? Well, I'm in catering anyway. It doesn't cost much. And all this, and there were complaints. And I thought, well, what do you want? Portion control. If you want portion control, I'll give it to you. You want to measure everything? And basically, I understood that I was being accused of making bucks out of this turnout. And my motto, the way I see it, I don't want to have a bad attitude personally. And if I'm ahead and I pay my expenses, that's great. If I've got extra, I'll turn it back in. But that's the way I view it. But I was accused, in a sense, of making a buck out of everybody type of thing, you know. And I remember we went away on a holiday after that. And I was steaming for hours, just walking around outside. I was upset. I thought, you give your heart, you work hard, you bring people together. And you accuse me of making a buck. I would turn it in anyway. It really, really kicked me where it hurt. Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12 tells you the way I felt. And perhaps when somebody does something to you that hurts, that upsets you, you can't help it. You've got to be upset. Proverbs 12, verse 18. It's kind of, or it can kind of be like this. Proverbs 12, verse 18. There are those who speak like piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise heals. And the Revised Standard Version has it like this. Some words are like sword thrusts. Imagine that. You know, have you ever been winded any time, fallen down, and you can't catch your breath? Let's not kid ourselves. That's the way it can be. An offense can really hit hard. And if we go to 1 Samuel 25, we go to verse 13. Here's an example, a biblical example. It's 1 Samuel 25. I don't know how to pronounce this man's name. I pronounce it Nabal, but it probably is pronounced Nabal. Nabal. But I will pronounce his name as Nabal. Now, what happened was that David and his 600 men were out in the wilderness there, and there was a very wealthy landowner. And apparently you have losses of sheep, losses of flock due to wild animals or people stealing them and whatever. But because David's men were there, and David had given them specific instructions, you guard this man's property, right? We're going to be neighbors here. And they looked after all his flocks so that he was missing none of them. And so what happened was that it was a feast day. When they sheared sheep, I don't know why, it was a celebration. They had a big feast, and it was a feasting time. And so David sent 10 of his young men over to Nabal, and he said, well, you know, this is from your son. Notice the humility, your son David. I have looked after all your sheep now. I'm like your neighbor. From your son David, give to these men whatever you find to give, whatever you want to give. And Nabal turned around and he scolded at them. He turned around and he said, he accused David as a runaway. Many people have run away from their masters, he would say, you know. And he shouted at them. He said, what, am I going to give you what I have for my men, for my sheep, for my employees here, give it to men who I don't know where they are from? Anyway, he scolded at them. They went back and they told David, well, I wonder how they told him. Well, he told us, yeah, he really gave it to us. They must have told him that way. And so in 1 Samuel 25, verse 13, we continue the story. an offense at hitting. Now, you don't want to put this guy who's got 600 men under him, a fiery redhead, huh? You don't want to put him off, because this is what you get. And David said to his men, 1 Samuel 25:13, let each man gird on his sword. And they each one girded on his sword. And David also girded on his sword. Okay, get your M15s. We're down there. I mean, it's a sword was used for a specific purpose. A military weapon today, like a military gun, is used for one purpose, isn't it? Right? If he says, get your guns, we're going down there. Well, you know, it's not in vain that he said, get your guns, we're going to use them. Get your swords, we're going to use them. And about 400 men went up with David, and 200 stayed by the provisions. Now, here is the self-talk of David, where we've got to let off steam. But he was on his way to for action, you see. We need to let off steam. Here we go. Now, David had said, this is a summary of what he was saying. He was probably carrying on, absolutely infuriated. Surely in vain I have kept all that belongs to this fellow in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed. Nothing. Now, they could have lost maybe 100 sheep, 120, I don't know. I don't know what the losses were, but they were significant, so that nothing was missed of all that was his. And he has returned me evil for good. So and more also may God do to the enemies of David if I leave any, and he becomes pretty graphic here, of all that is his until the morning, even one who pisses against the wall. Very graphic. Now, you know, David could avenge himself. What if when we have been slighted in such a manner, equivalent to our day, what if we could take retribution? What about it? It shows us that a man who was after God's own heart, if this man turned around and he was going to do this Nabal and his household in, right? It shows a natural inclination that we all have. We all have the same nature. So if we could, right, would we be any different? Or would we also say, if we could, okay, payback time? That's a natural inclination. The natural inclination is to kick. To, you know, sometimes I don't know about you, when I'm driving someone's driving slow, I need to overtake, and there's someone in the overtaking lane and they just sit there. And Manola looks at me, she knows what I say. You know, come on, Turkey. I wonder, you know, we have that same nature. But the thing is, we can't follow that nature. We can't shove back. Shove back is not the right thing. And I call it Newton's law of emotional kickback. Newton said that every action will be met with an equal and opposite reaction. Now, our job is to hold back that reaction, that opposite reaction, because that opposite reaction is a natural law that kicks in regardless. And we need to hold it back. And it can happen either inside the fellowship of God's fellowship and even outside. But inside there's been a lot of offenses. Matthew 7, let's go to Matthew 7. We always have to have a balance. We can't just call someone back and say, please come back. There's a part of my face you haven't walked on yet. Please, please, do some more. Kick me another time. No, that's not the approach. Matthew 7:6. Do not give that which is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before the swine. Why? Because they won't recognize any good that you give. lest they trample them under their feet and turn around and tear you in pieces. But that's the balance we have to have. But, you know, past offences have hurt people. Like, I met one fellow while I was walking in my hometown, and he was offended at the money that he gave to the church. He counted it all, $30,000. He said, I counted 30. I didn't have to do that. Well, unfortunately, he was of a different orientation. He also said that I didn't have to, you don't have to keep the Sabbath. Well, he'd gone way, way out, you know. And unfortunately, he died in that state. But, you know, situations like third tithe that was given, I met a lovely couple that said, we've been married 33 years, we should have been married 34 years. It was the third tithe year for us, and we gave. And really, the government does handle helping the needy in this country. So it really wasn't required, and to hear that it was sort of spent in a way that was just, how can we say, scattered, that really did something to them. That hurt them, and I could understand that. There was a minister that told me firsthand that he was told by a individual who said that a minister was in his house 20 years before, and he said to him, your problem is that you are inane. Inane is like brainless. You've got nothing between your ears. That's your problem. Now, he said 20 years passed, but it was as if it was yesterday. That really, really hurt. And he sought to help him and to encourage him. There was another case where at a feast site, area coordinator, a member went there to fix the flowers up, right? Went there to fix the flowers up, and she noticed a bar. She worked in a bar, and the bar was equal to a commercial bar. It was stocked up so well. Where did that money come from? It came from the membership, right? Offences can happen. They will come. But, you know, I remember one of the things that the late Herbert Armstrong said, and that stayed with me. He said, if we look to men, we will be hurt. We will be offended. But if we look to God and we do it to God, we give to God, then there's no offence. There's no offence with God. So the point is, we will be disappointed, but the lesson is, don't be a man pleaser. Don't do things to please people. Do things to please God. Okay, so the point two, we're on to point two now. We need to get off upset, and we need to let off steam. We need to get it out of our system. When we're offended, don't bottle it in, whatever you do. Think it out. Let it out. There was a situation at a feast again one time when our boys were young, and what happened was that another member, she said, look, my son is just a little bit older than our boys. He's so responsible. Oh, you know, if ever you need your boys looked after, he'll look after them. No problems at all. Oh, he's mature. He's. And so we said, okay, well, all right. We let him mind our boys. And she was the type of person that would, I found out after, as I saw through the years, that if her children said jump, she'd say, how high do I jump? Right? And so what happened was, well, that's my interpretation anyway. All right? You're only getting a one-sided story on that one, but that's what I observed. And anyway, so a raucous, out of control. Someone else came in and he lost control or what. It was a bit of a problem. Wow, was she upset because of, it wasn't her son's fault. And it got to the minister. Anyway, so the minister started to tell of the situation, and I think it was a end of year report, and he told a few things and he put it in there. And he's at the end of that, he said, "I hope we have a better report next year." That was the one and only report that he gave. And he said, "We have some problems, like having children look after children." Oh, okay. "And it happens at the feast sometimes." Well, that's one, that's two. Okay, maybe. And then he said, it represents a gross absence of leadership, especially from the father. Number three, I got that. You know, number three, that's me. All right. Well, you don't have all the story here. And so what happened was that she went and really filled his head, you know, and told him all about it. Well, okay. I wasn't going to go and say anything to her because, you know, aside from everything, I understand that mothers are like she lionesses. They love their children. Her husband was a good friend and he was a level-headed fellow, you know, so there was no talking there. So I forgot about it, but you know, it was at the end of the tape. We had tapes then and at the start of the next, and I knew exactly what it was. I listened to it about 10 times. Yep, that's me. And you can't help it. It really hurts. So the point here, let's go to Psalm 4:4. Here's a principle that I used back then. Psalm 4:4. And one of the things I did, you know, you need to talk about it. I talked to Manola, obviously. I talked to my good friend Adrian Laflane. We just talked about it, and we understood what was happening. We cooled down. Psalm 4, verse 4. I'm going to read it from the Expanded Bible. It says, "Be angry, but don't sin. When you are angry," now, angry, it says in brackets, "disturbed," or tremble with anger or whatever, "do not sin. Think about these things," okay, in brackets you've got, "meditate, speak to yourself quietly," right, "as you go to bed or on your bed." Do get it out of your system. Think about it, but don't do the wrong thing. Feel the pain, go through the situation, but don't do the wrong thing. Don't sin. Why? Let's go to James 1. Why? Here's a reason. There's many reasons. And I wonder whether at times like that we should step back and gain an overview of our calling and why we're breathing, why we're called, why we're here, why we were born. James 1 and verse 18. Let's get the overview. "According to his own will," James 1:18, "he begat us by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all his created beings." A tremendously exalted calling for the humble. Verse 19, "For this reason, my beloved brethren, let every man," now here's the advice, because you have a tremendous calling, right? That's the reason. "For this reason, my beloved brethren, let every man be quick to hear," and then next step, there's three steps here, "slow to speak and slow to anger." Verse 20, "because a man's wrath does not work out God's righteousness." Verse 21, "therefore, having rid yourselves of all filthiness, it causes anger wrongly placed." Filthiness, remember, we don't give that which is holy unto the dogs or the swine. He calls it filthiness. "Then in meekness, accept for yourselves the implanted," implanted, yeah, not natural, it's not natural. Instruction from God is not natural. The implanted word which is able to save your... Ever heard of these pacemakers? They're implanted. It's not something we have. It's something that's put into us. So in other words, God's word is implanted in us. Now the thing to realize also, if we look around the world today, our world, peace is not what is about us. The bad guys, it's the bad guys are all over the place. I remember seeing this film called, I think it was Las Vegas or something, about the mafia. And there was a particularly graphic situation where two men had to strip down to their underwear, top and bottom, and then the scene followed. They were systematically clubbed with these, it looked like metal baseball bats, right? Without mercy, without compassion, just clubbed till they were unconscious. And they'd been made to dig a big hole, and they just kicked them in there, no mercy, still alive, right? And then they buried them alive. That's the kind of thing that is about us. And we think, boy, that's pretty... Roy, you picked something pretty rough there. Well, you know, does anybody see the news about what's happening in the Middle East and what has happened? Long holes, graves, and people shot, they fall in there. If they don't conform to the desires of ISIS, the group there, it goes on. It's terrible. And it's reflected in the people around us also. It's just bad news. It's not giving. It's not helping. There was another simple situation. I'm in a supermarket of all places. And there's this guy, this fellow, and he's got his trolley and he moves diagonally. So you can't get by him. Two people can't get by him. You have to wait. And it's done purposely. In one section and another section. Excuse me, you have to... No, don't take the hint. You walk around me. These things are around us. Offensive behavior. There's pride. There's cynicism. There's anger. Listen to the politics, the way they attack each other. And recently, what they're doing. Accusations and counter-accusations and you come clean. And they just stop short of name-calling. But they do it in a very skillful manner. So it's not natural. Tell you, I'll give you a comparison. There was one time I was in the Gold Coast and I love to go out early morning and just look at the ocean, meditate and think about some scriptural principle, and here I am rejoicing, I'm happy, and I go right into Surfers Paradise and I sit down early morning. I get a nice cup of coffee, a nice strong Italian coffee, you know, that's what we call it. But here I am with this lovely cup of coffee, and this fellow, he looked like he had a rough night. A young bloke come over, he was broke, and he was going to ask for something. He asked, just talking, and I said, I looked at him, I said, do you want some breakfast? He said, well, sit down, you want some breakfast? Yeah, oh, thanks. And the waitress come over and said, what do I take? Whatever you want, just order it. All right, it's okay. He orders a big breakfast, you know, and we're yakking away. What do you do? How are you? Nice little chat, and I'm drinking my coffee, right? And eventually the big breakfast comes, and he puts it down. He looks at it, and I'd finished my coffee. I said, well, I finished my coffee. Enjoy your breakfast. I'll just go pay for it and see you. But, he wanted me to stay. It can't just happen that someone gives you something like that and disappears for no reason. You do that for me for no reason? Who are you? I mean, it doesn't make sense. You got to stay. I said, no, I've got to get back. I'll fix it up. Enjoy. And I left. There's a comparison. You know, it doesn't happen. But if that happened in our society, in the news, what do they report? Can anybody recall any good news? Someone that did something fantastic, you know, that helped? I mean, it comes through every now and then, but it is not the dumb thing. What about a good movie? that left you uplifted to turn around, achieve and do something, help someone? Or is it because, righto, this guy gets shot, there's this fantastically replicated corpse with the cuts, the missing limbs, the whole bit? I mean, is that what we see? So that's what we've got, is a lot of negative energy. There's too much, but this negativity is not the way for one within whose temple the Father and Christ have made their home. It's not for one to conduct themselves the same way as the world. You know, we have the indwelling of power, light, energy. It's there. We're plugged in. We've got it. Let's go to Proverbs 26 and verse 4. Now, we're talking about not pushing back. We've got to be careful not to answer in kind. See, there's two examples that we've just discussed. Which example should we follow? I asked myself, which example do you want to follow, Roy? What should you do here? Matthew 26 and verse 4. It says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like unto him." So if we follow these negative examples, we're no better. And the thing is, you know, we've got to do things different. I'll tell you another story of years back when I was going to school, as a matter of fact. I remember this guy. He's a big fellow. I didn't see how big he was. I was with two other guys, and he was riding down the hill with his bike, and he was going from one side to the other, and he looked so goofy. So I gave him a smile, and I did a thumbs up to him and followed him down the road. Yeah, good on you. He took it as an offense. He stopped down the road, and he started to walk up in the same fashion, to the left, to the right, holding his bike. And I thought, here's trouble. He is big. And I thought, as a kid, the three of us take him. Oh, that's stupid. Anyways, he come up, he looked at me, and I said, I got the first win, and I said, "Mate, sorry, I thought you were a mate." And he looked at me, "Oh, that's all right," he said, turns around, and he walks back like this with his bike, side to side, and he was happy. You don't answer a fool according to his folly, right? If he came in for trouble, I wasn't going to give him trouble. But a good word just turns it away. Even in fellowship, I ask in the fellowship, am I answering someone rashly here? You know, am I being rash? We have to think about what we say. When you're hit with an offense, you need to feel the assaulting shockwave, I say it again, of the offense. And you need to be careful because it will seize control of the emotional stabilizers, and it shakes you and moves you into dangerous waters of inappropriate reaction and response. What we have to do, rather, is let off steam. Don't hold it in. And you know what? Our first reaction is going to be rough. It is going to be rough. We're going to be mad. We're going to stomp around. We'll do it. Stomp around. But let's go to Romans 12 and verse 18. We have to remember when we're in that state of mind, when we've been hurt, when we've been upset, we need to remember Romans 12, verse 18. If possible. Now, here's the implanted word. Here it is. Here's the conduct. If possible, Romans 12, verse 18. If possible, as much as is your part, be at peace with all men. Verse 19, beloved, do not avenge yourselves. Do not call fire down from heaven to consume these hopeless rabble. Rather, leave this to God's wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will recompense. And you know, one of my sons was in a business and he was really used and abused. Business partners, senior business partners. And I told him, I said, look, they are going to cop more than you. you have a raw deal to get out of the business. I know you've lost money, but get out of the business because they are going to cop worse than you. And you know what? Over the years, I bring it up now and then, and that is exactly what happened. They got a raw deal. The next thing is, okay, vengeance is mine, I'll recompense. The next thing is, after you let it out, you need a friend. You need a close friend to talk, to say things with, to go over it. And so we'll just have a little break, and then we'll come back to you need a friend.